It's Monday morning, the last Monday of August. Whoa, let that sink in for a second. The last Monday of August, so we're into the final dog days of summer, and Labor Day is on the horizon. A lot of people on vacation this week. Ooh, that includes me later in this week. So I decided to get out in front of the early Labor Day travel, and I'm beginning my, I haven't flown since April, but I'm beginning my trek to Houston to visit mom on Wednesday afternoon. It's one shot. I don't have to change planes. I'm just going to believe everything will be fantastic. So I haven't seen mom since Christmas when Penny and I drove to Houston from the New York City area. And so for that reason, and because football's starting and because I just need a little refresher before we kick off our busy season, I decided that my summer vacation would take place in Houston. But at least mom has a pool. And actually, I have noticed that the temperatures in Houston, at least over the next week or the stretch of my vacation, are not any hotter than what it's been in my neighborhood all summer and is supposed to be my neighborhood. So maybe they have a greater chance of rain in mom's neighborhood. It's just been one of those long, hot, dry, crusty summers. And in some cases, icky and sticky, muggy, buggy, no huggy. Those are my terms for summer. But yes, my vacation's coming up. I'm really looking forward to it. Likely will take most of the 5+ days away from social media to recharge and refresh and remind myself how much I love football. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks for hanging out with us on what is now a Monday morning. We've promised photos, more on Twitter, A-Law Radio. But if you missed the photo of my cat, I forgot about this. The photo of my cat that I posted on Friday. I know I mostly talk about my dog. It's because I don't like my cat. I love my dog. It's like having two children and one of them is just a gem. And the other one's a total pain in the ass. Well, that's the cat. Anyway, she is never not talking. She never is at a loss for words. She always has something to say. And so when I told her it was Happy Friday, this was her response. Anyway, that's on my social media. And then a photo from Old Timers Day, my favorite old timer of all time, at Citi Field participating in an old timers game for the Mets. You can check that out as well on Twitter, A-Law Radio. And as I say, we'll put up some photos on Facebook before this hour is done. I promise we owe you. We are live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. Whether you're looking to purchase a new home or refinance yours, Rocket Mortgage can help you get there. For home loan solutions that fit your life, Rocket can. Max Scherzer throws a gem through 7 innings on Sunday, but the Mets don't come up with any hits. In fact, 3 total hits. Maybe there was a hangover from a long day at the ballpark on Saturday. Not an actual hangover, because that would be really poor choice by the Mets in the middle of a series. So a bad loss for the Mets with Max Scherzer on the mound. But I would say far worse performance for the Yankees in Oakland over the weekend, where over the course of the last 2 games, the offense once again disappeared.
Back of the dugout. Vote, it's a fly ball to right center. Judge going back on this. At the track, he'll turn and watch it hit right off the top of the wall. Around third is Brown. Comes to the plate. Here's the throw, and it's not in time. Steven Vogt doubles high off the wall in right center, and the A's have the early lead. It's 1-0 Athletics in the first.
The righty sets and deals, and a fastball grounded up the middle. It's going to find its way through. Kemp's around third. He's going to score. Racing to third base without a throw, Seth Brown. And it's 4-0 Athletics.
Swing and a miss. Strike 3, and the ball game is over. Cabrera strikes out, and the Yankees have drawn back-to-back games and split this 4-game set in Oakland.
The last 22-plus hours have not been, very good for us offensively. So,
no.
We got to do a better job, and we got to turn the page on this one.
Aaron Boone with the understatement, but this is how it happens for the New York Yankees. I know the Mets had 3 total hits in their 1-0 loss to Colorado, which is not anything to write home about, but the Yankees, well, they decided to one-up the Mets. They produced just a single run on 4 hits, Sunday in losing in Oakland. Now, Colorado's bad. Oakland's worse. A single run on four hits. But that's actually an improvement from the offense on Saturday. Did you guys follow this game that went into extra innings between the A's and the Yankees? This is in the Bay Area on Saturday night. One hit in 11 innings. And they lose on a throwing error and a couple of walks in the 11th to the A's. One hit in 11 innings. So over the course of their last 20 innings, the Yankees have managed five hits and a single run. Oh, wait, no. They had a couple of runs in the 11th. They were not on hits, though. So we'll just look at the hit production. Five hits. My stomach just growled. That is my excuse. What happens when my stomach is empty? My brain sometimes comes up with things that are not accurate. So I apologize. My stomach apologizes. Anyway, two losses. Offense disappears. And while they miss opportunities there in Oakland, they do still have that lead in the AL East. We're heading into the final month of the regular season.
It's right in front of us.
Far more concerning for the Yankees still is that they're not playing their best baseball, and it's easy to see, and they all know it.
Well, you got to tip your cap sometimes. You know, they got some good pitchers over there that, you know, made pitches when they had to and, you know, kind of kept us off balance a little in between, you know, the past couple days. And, you know, as baseball, you're going to have a couple nights like that. Yeah, we didn't win. You know, it's disappointing. But we got a good club here. You know, came away with two wins. You know, we're not happy about it. But, you know, like I said, there's nothing we can do about it now besides learn from it and, you know, get ready for Anaheim.
Aaron Judge did smoke home run number 49. I think that was Friday's game. So the series with Oakland, they end up taking two, but also losing two. And then they lose their closer. Well, sometimes closer. I don't know. He's a reliever. We'll just call him a bullpen guy. Aroldis Chapman is on the IL because he's incurred a relatively serious infection from a new tattoo.
I don't think this is going to take away too much time for me. You know, I'm just waiting the next couple of days for everything to heal correctly and so that I can start doing all kinds of baseball activities. I'll probably do a bullpen and then right into games.
Aroldis Chapman's comments through an interpreter, but the idea that he got an infection from his tattoo, I suppose not extremely foreign, but do the thought popped into my mind. Do we need to now add don't get tattoos in season to the list of things that these athletes can't do in their contracts? People rail against Fernando Tatis for riding a motorcycle in the DR and then he fell off and he broke his wrist, and I get it. And that's a risk that the Padres have chalked up to, hey, he's young, but we also can't trust him. He made a really poor decision. Is it also a poor decision to get a tattoo in season when you might end up with infection?
And half the bullpen has been going down with injury if you're the New York Yankees.
I don't know. Crazy stuff. Anyway, so he should be back soon, but that's right on that list of nuttier, crazier reasons why athletes have ever hit the IL. I mean, we've had all kinds of like household accidents. I remember one time Brian Griese, who was the quarterback for the Broncos, he was holding this massive house party, lots of alcohol, of course, and he did like his alcohol, and he tripped over something backwards in his driveway. I don't remember if it was a dog. He tripped over something in his driveway. But you know, athletes will break toes by kicking things, or they'll punch things and they'll break a hand. I mean,
the Guitar Hero one is still my favorite.
That's right. Or how about the guy who went on the disabled list at the time because he had texting thumb?
Yes.
He was a pitcher.
Absolutely.
He had texting thumb, yep. And he said he was texting too much with his brother who was overseas, something like that. Yeah, so all kinds. I mean, these are human beings. They don't always make the best decisions just like we do, and we sometimes incur injuries from stupid crap.
Got to watch out for texting thumb. It's real.
It is, actually. I think I have arthritis in my thumb. For a couple of years, it would crack so badly in the wintertime. It doesn't anymore, thankfully, because I've started taking some supplements. But yeah, it's real, and it's not spectacular.
No.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. The Seattle Mariners shut out the Guardians. Shoot. Did I say Indians earlier in the show, or did I just say Cleveland? Huh.
I think you said Cleveland.
Okay. Because the name Guardians hasn't popped into my brain over the last couple hours, so I hope I just said Cleveland and didn't offend anyone by saying Indians. I apologize if I did. So the Guardians were shut out and actually dropped 3 of 4 in Seattle. But I think it was appropriate on Sunday because it was the day to honor Ichiro. He becomes the 10th member of the Mariners Hall of Fame, and he was seated right next to Ken Griffey Jr. the whole time.
He was my idol even before I came to America. But in 2009, he returned to Seattle, and I finally got to be his teammate. He's a jokester, but for me, he's also a true professional. He helped me in more ways than I can express. Being his teammate is truly one of my career highlights.
How neat is that? I mean, Ken Griffey Jr. is a Hall of Famer. He got to play with his dad. He's an iconic member of Seattle, as well as, I would say, Cincinnati, even though he didn't spend his best years there. But he and his dad, they're still ambassadors for baseball. We just saw them there at the the Field of Dreams game in Iowa, where they walked out of the cornfield and had a catch. I mean, just he means so much to baseball, and I love Ken Griffey Jr. Could you imagine hearing from Ichiro, one of the greatest international players in baseball history, but also you want to talk about an icon. He's a legend in Japan, right? I mean, I don't know if you guys remember when he first got to the majors. I'm glad I didn't miss this. It was a phenomenon that you could feel worldwide. The amount of Japanese media that would follow him everywhere and follow the Mariners everywhere, and everything he did made such huge news in Japan. And the games were broadcast in Japan. I mean, he was a worldwide superstar and obviously is worthy of the Baseball Hall of Fame, which, by the way, he'll be eligible coming up. I don't remember the exact year, but there was actually the president of the Hall of Fame was there in Seattle for this ceremony to honor him in the Mariners Hall of Fame. And I just thought that was really cool. The two of them from completely different worlds. And yet, because of their ties with the Mariners and because of the fact that they both mean so much to baseball in different regards, they're a lifelong friends, but also connected forever. A really cool moment. And then Julio Rodriguez, I don't think he stole the thunder, but he was also the talk of the town in Seattle this weekend because he signs this unique long-term, if he plays all 17 years of the contract. It's 12 years guaranteed. It's got 5 years as a player option that are built in. Multiple layers to this deal. It's very creative. And he says he's thrilled to stay there in Seattle, even though it's pretty far from home if you're a 21-year-old from the DR.
What's up, guys? This is Julio. I couldn't be happier to call Seattle home for a long time and be able to play in front of you, Mariners fans. See us rise. Let's get it.
Interesting, though, to think about his history, right? Because at age 16, it was the Angels who appeared to have the nose in front, I guess, for the Julio Rodriguez sweepstakes. And instead, it was kind of this last-ditch effort by the Mariners. So Rodriguez signs with them in July 2017 at age 16. We've only seen him on the field for 2/3 of a season. He's an all-star, obviously. He was a big star at the Home Run Derby. But man, these contracts, these types of contracts, I'm leery of them. 12 years already and could be 17 years. And the Mariners have no say because if he picks up that player option, 17 years. 2039 we're talking about now. How can you have any idea what happens over the next 5 years, much less 10 or 12 or 17? 17 years. But they are sure that they want to hitch their wagon to his star.
Seals rise.
I'm blown away by that. We've never seen a contract like this. The money could be upwards of $470 million over the 17 years. but it's not all that uncommon. Now, the details and the layers of his are new, but he becomes the 26th major league player to sign a contract worth more than $200 million. It's becoming the norm now.
Let's get it.
Yeah, you're going to get it all right. Bit of a scare for the Houston Astros and their Cy Young candidate in that same AL West division, Justin Verlander, apparently felt a tweak as he was running to first base in the top of the third. So he leaves the game against Baltimore after 60 pitches. He's allowed just 3 hits at that point, but did not return to the field.
He's going in for some imaging tomorrow. And I think it's already been reported that it was he felt it when he covered first base. It was his calf, and that's, you know, the best of bad news. I mean, you know, we were glad it wasn't anything to do with his elbow or arm or anything like that, so we'll just have to wait.
Obviously extremely concerned. Feel like he's been the best pitcher in baseball all year long, and we were very fortunate to have him. And, you know, I don't know any of the details.
Alex Bregman, he is blissfully unaware, except that it would be a massive loss to not have Justin Verlander for any length of time. They did beat the O's last night. I did not see, actually. Was he not the pitcher of record? It was scoreless when he left, right? Okay. So it turns out that Verlander doesn't pick up win number 17. He only pitched 3 innings, yes. And so the Astros win, but Verlander is the big question mark now moving forward because he is the rock. He is the ace. Busy weekend on the, oops, sorry, got a baseball in here that I'm playing with in case you can't tell. Busy weekend on the baseball diamond all around as we hit the end of August. That's nutso. Now coming up, it was also a tumultuous weekend, an emotional weekend. I would say a challenging and tough weekend for the Buffalo Bills coaching staff and front office. 48 hours after they hear about a civil lawsuit that accuses their rookie punter of participating in a gang rape of a 17-year-old high school student last fall. You will hear from Sean McDermott as well as Brandon Bean. Plus, we had the opportunity to catch up with a Bills insider to find out what the team knew and when. And we'll bring back a portion of that conversation. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
It's not a situation we take lightly. I'm hurt. I understand they're hurt. It's emotional. It's not easy to hear about some of the things that I've heard about over the last several hours, say, and, you know, haven't slept a lot, to be honest with you, because this is a game, but there's other things that are more important than this.
They were accusations, and it clarified exactly what they were, and at that point, it's a real civil case. It's not a, this may happen, it's something that you have to respond to. And at this point, we're not the judge and jury. We don't have that. And we just, again, this is bigger than football. And our culture here is more important to us than winning football games. You really feel bad for that whole situation. And you know, ultimately, this is a legal situation. We don't know, you know, all the facts. And that's what makes it hard. But at this time, we just think it's the best move for everyone to move on from Matt and let him take care of this situation and focus, you know, on that. And so we're going to part ways there.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Obviously uncomfortable for both Sean McDermott on Friday and Brandon Bean on Saturday, the head coach and general manager of the Buffalo Bills, in the wake of the explosive allegations made by a young woman who was a high school senior last fall. She was 17 years old, and in a civil lawsuit, she and her attorneys detail what she calls a gang rape at the hands of Ariza, as well as two of his San Diego State teammates. And the details are, they're horrific. And so right now there have been no criminal charges filed, though to my understanding, this is still being considered by authorities. What did the Buffalo Bills know and when? That is the question. Bean alludes to them having some knowledge before, but it was clarified with the lawsuit. I had a chance to catch up with Matt Perino of Syracuse.com, a five-year Bills insider who was in Charlotte when Sean McDermott made the choice to not allow Matt Ariza to punt in their Friday night preseason game. So it's been a tumultuous weekend leading up to the release of Ariza from the Bills roster. I started out by asking Matt what the stretch has been like around the team.
The real first glimpse that we got at it was in Carolina on Friday, and I was there and in the press conference room when Sean McDermott made his walk from the locker room after the game to the room, and it just felt a little bit different. Like, you could just feel the stress that I think that he was going through. Brandon Bean mentioned it yesterday when they announced the release, that he didn't really even know how Sean McDermott coached the game. And I think they know that they knew the severity of the situation. But the problem with that is, too, at the same time, you appreciate the fact that they're doing their due diligence and trying to make sure that, you know, they heard every side, but they had known about this since the end of July when Jane Doe's attorney approached the team, talked to their assistant general counsel, and gave them what Brandon Bean called the boulders of the story. You know, and that the only way to take that is they knew enough that there should have been some real concern. And then over the course of the next, you know, few weeks during training camp and into the preseason, you know, Matt Ariza remained on the team. He played. He was in a competition at punter with veteran Matt Hawk. Sean McDermott went on, pardon my take, after the first preseason game when Matt Ariza had that big punt. And he was, you know, kind of joking about him and, you know, saying how great of a kid he was and how Bills fans were just big fans. And it's like, you sit there on the outside and you wonder, how do you say these things knowing what you're learning from him? Now, Matt Ariza gave them his side of the story, and that Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott said that didn't change throughout the entire process. And so they were trying to gather as many facts as they could. What Brandon Bean said that yesterday was, we're not detectives. We're a GM and a head football coach, and we just couldn't get enough answers to make a decision. But they thought it was best to move forward and have Ariza go away from football, figure this whole situation out. They kind of wished him the best and made a decision and released him.
You mentioned the attorney for Jane Doe calling lead counsel for the team and them having boulders. All right, so at that point, it hadn't become public. Nobody had heard about it, really, outside of the few people who were involved with the lawsuit and then the couple people in the front office. But they release him after it blows up. What do they have to say about the timing?
Yeah, and there's definitely some questions about the timing. Like, you know, Brandon Bean couldn't say if they learned about this first. He couldn't remember the timing of it, whether it was from Ariza or if it was from that call to the counsel from Jane Doe's attorney. So, you know, the timeline of it is it's still a little bit hazy. And, you know, it felt like that the fact that he came to the stadium on Friday night and they still hadn't wanted to, you know, make a definitive decision on that, even as they were kind of learning some of the more graphic details. And Sean McDermott said he learned more things about this case after they saw the 11-page court civil suit document. So I can understand that to a degree, but it does feel like they weren't really willing to move on until everybody really knew the scope of it. And that's the part that I think doesn't sit well with people, because you know, whether it's, you know, just the graphic details of what was in that civil suit doc. And of course, it's one side of the story.
Right.
But I'm not going to sit here and assume innocence for Matt Araiza. I think everybody knows somebody in their life that's been affected by this kind of behavior, this kind of incident, and it turns your stomach and it's sickening. And, you know, any type of involvement in it, and you see the direct quotes of Araiza in the filing, and it just, with all that being the case, maybe just even having him be away from the team would have probably been a better approach. But they, at the end of the day, with all that said, and the fact that this could have been done better, no doubt about it, on the Bills' end, I think at the very least they made the right decision in the end, which was moving on from him.
Just to clarify, Matt, there's no indication that the team knew anything about this when they drafted him in April?
They did not know. Brandon Bean said if they had known, it would have taken Matt Araiza off their board, their draft board. He's reached out to, since they got the court document on Thursday, he's reached out to over 10 other NFL teams, you know, other executives that he knows, to ask if they knew. He said all of the teams he talked to said they didn't know either, and the NFL didn't know when the draft was happening. So then it brings up the question, if you're the Bills, do you feel lied to by Matt Araiza? He's claiming that he didn't, apparently, or his attorneys are claiming that he didn't learn about the fact that he was going to face charges in the civil suit until July-ish, early or maybe June. That date is kind of, I'm missing that right now. But, you know, that's the part of this that also doesn't sit well, is like that timeline and understanding. You know, Matt Araiza came out during the game when the Bills wouldn't allow him to go on the field. He put out a statement through his agent and said, I'm looking forward to clearing this up. The picture that's been painted is false. You know, basically, you know, said that he was innocent. Like, all right, prove it. And there hasn't been anything since. So just an awful situation all around. And you get to this part of the season and NFL fans are gearing up for the regular season, and for something like this to happen, especially for a Bills fan base that's been waiting for this season for 25 to 30 years since the Super Bowl era, to have a team that was the favorite to win it. This kind of puts a damper on all of that. They've moved on from him and are hoping to kind of put it behind them.
Matt Parrino of Syracuse.com, who was with the team on Friday in Charlotte and was there for the press conferences from both Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. Emotional, disturbing, troubled, no one right way to handle this type of situation. There is more with Matt. And so I would encourage you to get the podcast, After Hours, AmyLawrence.com. He does believe ultimately that the Bills did the right thing, though the timing is a little suspect, and I'm sure we'll hear more. Plus, he said that for the first time since pre-COVID, the reporters will have access to the players in a locker room after practice today. So unfettered access for about 20 minutes where they can wander around and ask questions in the wake of this situation blowing up over the last few days. So, again, check that out with Matt of Syracuse.com. After Hours, AmyLawrence.com.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Mentor brings it in. Tommy swings and it's a drive. Left field. He tied the game. Home run. Home run for Tommy Edman. That's his 10th of the year. 3-3. Did you say he likes the first pitch? He loves it. I like it too. O'Neill raising and lowering the bat. He swings and hits a high fly ball. That's hit to deep center. Back to the track. The wall. It's a goner. Three-run homer. Tyler O'Neill. The Cardinals lead 6-3 in the bottom of the eighth inning. And a two-home run inning against A.J. Minter. I smell the coffee brewing.
You know, I caught it pretty clean, so, you know, obviously hit it the way I wanted to, and, you know, stuck to my game plan, and things worked out the right way.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
You play the guitar on the MTV. John Rudy and company on Cardinals radio. This was the Sunday night game that was delayed for an hour by rain and weather in St. Louis, but it was worth the wait for those fans who showed up at Busch Stadium. No more home runs in the last week for Albert Pujols, but they take 2 of 3 from the Atlanta Braves. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. So Tyler O'Neill with the game-winning homer as they have to rally past the Braves. And World Series champions are still in a really good position, let's be honest. But this was an opportunity for them to maybe pick up some ground on the Mets, who lost on Sunday.
Go figure. I mean, he's got two of the most dangerous right-handed hitters in baseball, probably. And like I say, I don't. Credit to O'Neill, too. I mean, to get that ball out, kind of how these series is going to go when you get clubs like, you know, they've been playing good, we've been playing good, and you know, they were good games.
So A.J. Minter also gave up Tyler O'Neill's two-out drive along with the Tommy Edman home run. So he was the one who was there on the hot seat on the mound as the Cardinals rally in the eighth. And they've been a lot of fun to watch. Even without Albert Pujols, they've been one of the hottest teams in the majors in August and right now are protecting a 6-game lead over the Brewers, who won their last two games of the weekend. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. So Braves and, of course, the Mets, the team they're chasing in the National League East. At the bottom of that division are the Nationals, World Series champions from 2019. Man, the star pitching that we saw from them in that incredible September and October, an October to remember for the Nationals. They faced elimination a dozen times in that postseason, and they were still the last team standing. Featured not just Steven Strasburg, who wasn't he the World Series MVP, but also Max Scherzer. Just a phenomenal display by the starters and the bullpen. It was awesome. Well, they've fallen on hard times. We know that. Did you know this, though? This is your Monday morning nerd alert. This blows me away. I had to read this multiple times and then also read it to producer Jay to make sure I wasn't losing my mind. The Washington Nationals had gone a record 43 games without their starting pitcher earning the W. What? How is that even possible? Well, that's why it's a record. We'd never seen it before in Major League Baseball. And now that crown, that dubious distinction, if you will, belongs to the Nationals. However, they ended the streak when Patrick Corbin picked up the win against the Reds on Sunday. He went 6 innings, allowed a single run, 5 strikeouts, and now his record is 5-17. Wow.
Yikes.
Yeah, thank you, John Sterling. Your team has its own issues. First time in 44 games that the Nationals starting pitcher recorded a win. Seriously, Jay, did you even think that was possible? I knew they were bad. I know, but you have to work hard to get that record.
Yeah, that seems unfathomable to go that long without a starter getting a win. I guess it's a record, yeah.
It is a record. Not since Josiah Gray on July 6th had a national starter earned a W.
That's horrible.
It's nearly 2 months.
That's really bad.
The previous big league record was 35 games. Oh, get this. The previous, not the same franchise, but same city. 35 games set by the 1949 Washington Senators, who became the Texas Rangers in the, was it the 70s when they became the Rangers? I'm sorry, I don't remember the exact, that was before me, but I don't remember the exact date. So please forgive me for that. Not since the 40s has a team's starting pitchers been so devoid of W's. Huh.
It almost doesn't seem possible.
You know, it's coming to my mind right now. This is crazy reference, but you'll laugh, I think. Some of you will laugh. When Jameis Winston pretends to eat the W's,
A classic.
The Washington Nationals starting pitchers were eating W's but spitting them out. I mean,
I look good and I know it.
Right. Where's my nerd alert? Or N-E-R-D-A-L-E-R-T. N-E-R-D-A-L-E-R-T. If anything deserves a nerd alert, it would be that. Oh my gosh, that's horrific.
That's nerd stuff.
That's terrible is what it is. Beyond being nerd stuff, it's embarrassing. Like, super. So let's move on. Oh no, wait. Let's hear Davey Martinez about it because this is fun actually.
For all of us, a win is a win, right? For me, and even though Patrick, he said it best, you know, it's a team win. You know, we want to go out there and compete, and that's what we talk about, you know, doing every day. And he did that today, and he kept us in the ballgame, and he pitched well.
So nonchalant, like it's no big thing to go 43 games without your starting pitcher getting a W. Like it doesn't matter. It happens every day.
I guess they got bigger problems in Washington.
It happens every month. Who cares? Oh, now all I can hear in my head is Kevin Durant. Who cares? Well, I feel like maybe we use our drops too much if I'm starting to...
Who cares?
...think of them. But now, sometimes producer Jay surprises me, and he drops one in that sounds so perfect and seamless that I never heard it coming. But in this case, I'm actually ahead because this is so ridiculous. It's ludicrous. 43 games in between wins for a starting pitcher. Sorry, Nationals fans, but that's brutal.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Exactly. I don't even know who that is. Who is that?
That would be Derek Carr.
Oh, I love Derek Carr. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Okay, we're going to transition to football because we're talking about drops here. We found one. Actually, the entire world found one. It went viral over the weekend. Tom Brady was facing the media, of course, because he's going to have to now that he's unretired and back with the team, back from his sabbatical. He was writing a book while he was gone. I don't know if I would have been amused or annoyed if he actually left his team to record an episode of The Masked Singer. But that was the rumor that was going around. In fact, Peter Schwartz tried to sell me on that last week. And I know that that's a big rumor because he will eventually work for Fox as a game analyst. I mean, he's taking over as the top paid analyst. And if you believe the rumors, I don't know that we've heard it confirmed, but the numbers are astronomical. I mean, they're eye-popping. $375 million. He's going to make more as an analyst than he made as a football player, even though he's got 17 Super Bowl rings. So he goes away for a sabbatical, but even though he's Tom Brady, people must know what he was doing while he was gone. Were you unretiring, then retiring again? Were you sick? Was something going on with your family? Did you have a business venture? Were you on The Masked Singer?
It's all personal. You know, everyone's got different situations they're dealing with, so we all have really unique challenges to our life, and, you know, I'm 45 years old, man. There's a lot of going on, so, you know, you just gotta try to figure out life the best you can, and, you know, it's a continuous process.
All right, Jay, here's the question. When I heard the quote, so you were the one that told me about the quote on the phone on Sunday. I was thinking he was being jovial and joking and making light of the questions, right? Because it sounds like that kind of a quip from Brady. We hear him on the golf course when he's mic'd up. We know that he's got a real sarcastic sense of humor. I'm 45 years old, man. I got a lot of bleep going on.
I'm 45 years old, man. There's a lot of going on.
I mean, if you just read the quote, it sounds like he was playing with the reporters, right? Like, but when you see his body language, he actually seems weary and really tired.
It's like sad, almost.
Yeah, very serious. I'm super tan, of course, from his trip to the Bahamas, but, well, he lives in Florida. But also, I was a little taken aback by his body language and how serious he seemed. He wasn't actually joking with the media. Maybe he's just annoyed at the questions. Maybe he's just tired of answering the questions. That could be part of it. Like Kyle Shanahan, you know, if I survive questions about my quarterbacks if I survive all these questions about quarterbacks.
As long as I can keep surviving press conferences.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you get annoyed at people asking you the same question, especially when it's none of your damn business. I mean, that's kind of the idea. Except, I don't know, his body language seemed to indicate there's something more going on.
I'm 45 years old, man. There's a lot of shit going on.
Yeah, I think I could see your that analysis of it where he's just maybe a little tired of answering the question and he's just like, hey, I got things going on. Like, leave me alone.
Exactly. It's none of your business. Except it is, because he's Tom Brady and he's the starter for a team that's expected to...
It's a fair question.
You know, make the playoffs and compete again for a Super Bowl. So anyway, I don't know. It just... It struck me, but it is a bite that you're going to hear over and over again, and you're going to see the quote. I'm 45 years old, man. There's a lot of bleep going on. I mean, that's so true. Aaron Rodgers is going to steal that. You know he is. At some point soon, we're going to hear Aaron say, I'm 39 years old, man. There's a lot of bleep going on. You just know it. That's what Aaron does. Have a manic Monday. We're back tonight after hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio. Boom!